Hello and welcome to the Thought Leader Podcast. I'm Jeff Heisner, video journalist and digital media manager with the Michigan District. And today we're joined by pastors Evan Geertner and Andrew Menz. Pastor Geertner from Our Shepherd in Birmingham and Pastor Menz from Zion Lutheran in Auburn. And we're talking today about why fewer people might be willing or less willing to take up that calling. And what are some of the ways and things that we can do to encourage people to answer this call? And I guess, first of all, why don't you lay out a few of the obstacles that pastors and church workers are facing right now in deciding whether or not to go into the ministry?
I think one obstacle is the question of finances, of 4 years of college and then 4 more years of seminary. The seminaries I know are focused on making sure people arrive at the seminary in good financial health. And sometimes if someone applies to the seminary and they've got a lot of debt, they'll even say, take care of some of your debt, then come back and apply again later. So I think that worry about college debt seems to be much more in the mind of both the admissions departments at the seminaries and also people considering the call to be a pastor and going to the seminary. I think, 20 years ago when I was going to seminary, we didn't think as much about debt. And I think to our detriment, I mean, there's a lot of guys that then entered ministry with a lot of college debt. I think they're being a lot more honest about debt and making sure people know what that means for ministry.
I would agree that finances is definitely an obstacle for people. Obviously, education is a lot more expensive than it was 10, 12 years ago, and that's doesn't look to change in the near future. And so, as Evan said, that you have 4 years upon 4 years, it's definitely a thing that causes people to pause for sure.
I know both of you are kind of leaders in this regard and in finding ways to encourage people and get people to join the ministry. Why don't you both talk about, and Andrew, why don't you start with some of those ways that you can help people overcome these obstacles?
You talked about us being leaders in this regard. I would deflect that a little bit and say my congregation has been a good leader in that. I'm not going to take the credit for their 130-year history, but they definitely have a history here and a generation and legacy. Having a history of 130 years, I think they built the school first, and they've fostered just a wonderful environment for people to grow up in the church, for children to grow up in our school, every day being surrounded with teachers and pastors and other students and staff that are continuing to better know and show Christ's love, and that leads people to have a positive view and a positive experience in the church and of church workers, I think.
And Evan, go ahead, take this. Talk about some of the things that you do with your church and with your community.
So as a church, Our Shepherd supports an endowment that now has about $780,000 in it that was formed with seed money from Howard Allward, who was the founding pastor at Our Shepherd. As he retired, he had a pastor's fund that he kind of seeded with money when people gave him money for a baptism or honorariums or just money. He just always kind of made sure he had some resources to help nudge someone into being able to go to the seminary so that if they provided excuses, he had a way to kind of answer each one of their excuses to say it's possible. Then when he died, the money that was in that fund went to go start this endowment. And then they spent about 2 years raising more money so that the endowment would be of a significant size. The goal was they would be able to pay the tuition of someone at one of the seminaries. And then a couple more years, they added a student at both of the seminaries. And so for several years each year, the congregation has a seminary Sunday where we solicit specific donations for that fund. We usually have a seminary student that comes from either Fort Wayne or St. Louis to preach that weekend. And we just kind of raise up that whole awareness in the congregation that our congregation is going to support men when they go to the seminary. And then we have annually also a golf outing that usually raises about $10,000 to $12,000 to go into that endowment. And so we want to reduce as much as possible the financial constraints But the Seminary Sunday, the golf outing, and those kind of efforts aren't just about making sure some bills are paid when someone's going to the seminary, but we're just trying to create also a whole level of conversation that this is possible. And this is something we do as a congregation. We either support someone specifically in our congregation, or we're going to just find a way that someone knows that they're supported. Trying to make sure that the support our congregation provides isn't just to people from our congregation, but goes to the whole church, and make that connection that our shepherd's a part of a bigger church body as well.
This may not be an easy question by any means, but what are your thoughts on how we can make things easier for future pastors or church workers just to get started?
I think just reminding these men when they're in high school, college, to think about it. It's not on the radar of some, and they know that they've got some gifts to maybe listen, to care, to teach, to counsel, and they don't know how to put that all together into a career. They may have this impression that pastors are very inaccessible or very much more smart or something like that, much more smart, whatever. But they just might not think about it. And so to just each confirmation year, I always figure out one of the guys in that confirmation year and say, you know what, I think you would be a good pastor. And there's not a confirmation class that's gone by where I haven't told at least one of those confirmation students, you should think about this. And I think just raising that possibility is something that reduces the obstacles, because a lot of the obstacles to going to the seminary are our own self-talk, the narrative we build in our own heads that it's not possible.
And Andrew, building that relationship is kind of how you got started too, correct?
Yeah, I would echo what Evan said, that, you know, I like that he finds somebody in every year's confirmation class to suggest and encourage them to think about it. Certainly it was that encouragement from my pastor when I was a confirmation student that put that seed in my head. And, you know, God's word continued to water and make that grow, and it came about. And so I think to encourage that, also the fact that my guidance counselor in high school, and I was a little bit surprised by this at the time, but, you know, he knew that I was a member of the Lutheran church in town. And he said, well, you know, there's a Lutheran school. And he was actually the one that first brought to my attention the Concordia system. And for me personally, you know, I had thought about it in high school. I thought about becoming a pastor on account of the fact that my pastor suggested it to me when I was of confirmation age. But going to a Concordia and the environment that's fostered there in the spiritual life of the campus and of the student body was very instrumental in pursuing the ministry.
So what suggestions do you have for other churches, other communities to get involved in this effort?
I love what Evan talked about with the endowment fund. And, you know, we don't have, obviously, I like what he talked about with the endowment fund and also the seminary Sunday. And it kind of gives me ideas that I'm thinking about borrowing for our own church. We don't every year have a seminary Sunday, but I think that's a great thing, because it puts in front of people and of our young people this idea that, oh, this is something that I could do. And when we have had church workers, students in the past, whether they're starting to be teachers or going to the seminary or in the pre-seminary program at one of the Concordias, we have a couple of different funds. We have a fund for the students at our day school, which is called the Dorothy Steeve Student Aid Fund, and that's named after a member of our congregation who is always just very supportive of the school, and people contribute to that fund. There's also the Pastor Teacher College Fund. That's when we have someone who is specifically going into church work. We'll encourage people to contribute to that when there's more of a need. And this is a congregation that just always responds when there's a need. They respond, and they're very generous in that regard. And so I think to try to create those funds, if your congregation doesn't have them, to try to create a fund in that manner, I think it's extremely brilliant and generous of the pastor that Evan talked about, who would take, you know, different monies that he would receive from special services, and that he kind of created this fund on his own. I think that's just incredible. But however it it happens. You know, there's many different ways to create that fund at your congregation and to get that started and to encourage your pastor to have a seminary Sunday. I think those are excellent things to do.
Every Sunday we have, you know, prayers for the church, for the country, for the sick. I think when we pray for the church, we should include that God would raise up people in our congregation to serve. And there's always this tension of directing people to the holy ministry. I don't want to diminish the everyday vocations that everyone does. And I think there's a way to do both. I think we should celebrate the ways that God has gifted men and women to work in their communities and in the schools and hospitals and all those sorts of ways and say, that's good and that's honorable. And also at the same time say, dear God, we need workers. The harvest is plentiful, the laborers are few. And so just to regularly pray, include it in the prayers of the church that God would raise up leaders in our community to be able to be a part of the holy ministry. And then I think that this idea of identifying people and just mentoring them, encouraging them, and let them know this is possible is important to do. And then everything we've talked about is largely kind of that high school, college student. I think that that second career, that guy that is just, you keep seeing that he's showing up in Bible study, teaching and leading and looking for more and more ways to mentor and encourage other people in the congregation. He just has this ability to connect people, is to be able to say to that person, have you thought about becoming a pastor? And now that gets to one of the obstacles, especially for second career guys to consider the holy ministry, is to be able to leave home. Our seminaries are residential. To be able to go to St. Louis or Fort Wayne and say, this is something you can do. I know when I was in college and there were a couple second career guys that were attending Fort Wayne, their families continued to live in the Detroit area. The kids continued to go to the schools that they were going to. And then husbands then commuted down to Fort Wayne. And they found a way to make it work. And I think there is some ways, creative ways, for that to happen. But there is always going to be this, when you go to seminary, you're not just offering yourself back to southeastern Michigan or up to, you know, the Tri-City area up in Midland and Saginaw and Bay City area. When someone goes to the seminary, it's important for the whole family to know that the ministry that they're going to be doing is for the whole church. I remember, you know, being at the seminary and getting that call day, and there was some that, you know, we would go places that we had not even heard of yet. The wives would have maps. You know, this was before the internet. We'd have maps on that call day to try to look up where the city were. There is, I think, in anyone that's going to become a pastor, this sense of calling, not just to say back home to my home congregation, but really to wherever God's going to lead me. So I think part of the conversation about equipping someone to become a pastor is to equip them for that idea that God's going to call you where he's going to call you. Listen to that calling for wherever it goes, and to not just place a bunch of boundaries. Well, I'll go with this, or I'll go with this. And as a pastor, as we mentor people, I think is part of reminding them, this call is going to be to where God sends you, not to where you want to go necessarily. And that's maybe a big shift in thinking for especially second career and families.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, in just talking with you guys, for this 10, 15 minutes here, building those relationships with those people that you know could make this that second career or get into this as their first career. That's so huge, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Relationships are key.
To touch on something quick, Jeff. Certainly, when possible, to encourage people from our own congregations to consider the ministry, to consider going to seminary, to consider church work as youth is a great thing to do. But if a person is in a congregation where, you know, they look around and they're not confronted with people that they feel like are obvious choices for the ministry, or maybe it's a very small congregation, maybe they don't have confirmation classes, maybe they don't have a whole lot of youth in that congregation. You know, there are adopt-a-student programs at the Concordias and at the seminaries that people can help out financially with those who have made that decision to pursue church work and pursue the pastoral ministry. And I know that I had a congregation, Cross of Christ from Bloomfield, Michigan, that sort of adopted me as a student when I was at the seminary. And they would, you know, I would get a letter and I would get assistance throughout the year from them. And it was always a wonderful thing, not just because you're a young married family, you know, and there's financial struggles, but as my wife, you know, reminisced the other day, we knew that we were not in this by ourselves, and that there was a church of, you know, God's church on earth, that people who had never met us before that were praying for us and encouraging us and supporting us, you know, in this process. So even if you don't know someone from your congregation that you can encourage, that you can suggest that they you know, consider this, there are other ways that you can support people financially, and certainly through your prayers, and develop relationships with those that you didn't know before, and encourage them throughout the process.
Andrew, what you're describing there, it is a powerful thing. When I was at the seminary, there was a congregation from rural Wisconsin that adopted me, and they would send letters, encouragement, phone calls when one of the guys was kind of traveling through St. Louis, and it was just this confidence that grew and grew during that time at the seminary, that we're not alone, that when we go to become pastors at congregation, we're a part of a body of believers. Those adoptive student programs, when a congregation really invests in it being more than just a check to a seminary, but does the letters and the phone calls and the encouragements, it's pretty powerful.
Well, guys, thank you so much. I appreciate the time. Great insights. Very much appreciate it. And we also want to thank you for listening to our Thought Leader podcast.